From the KTOO Newsroom in Juneau, I'm Yvonne Kremery. A resolution to protect the Southeast Alaska troll fishery passed in the state legislature Monday on a unanimous vote. House Joint Resolution 5 calls on state and federal governments to defend Alaska fisheries from a lawsuit filed by the Washington state-based environmental group, the Wild Fish Conservancy. The suit seeks to stop the Southeast troll fishery over what the Conservancy sees as a threat to the southern resident killer whales in the Puget Sound. The organization's position is that terminating Southeast King Salmon troll fishery might allow Chinook salmon to migrate back down the coast through key hunting grounds of the southern resident killer whales. The southern residents exclusively eat fish. They're also genetically, behaviorally, and even culturally distinct from other groups of killer whales. But according to NOAA Fisheries, the population has been in decline for decades. They now number in the 70s. The resolution to support the troll fishery was introduced by freshman Representative Rebecca Himschutz of Sitka, who sits on the House Special Committee on Fisheries. It received support across party lines in the Alaska Senate. Himschutz lauded the resolution's overwhelming bipartisan support in the latest vote. The Senate also heard from stakeholders from the troll fishery. Tim O'Connor is the mayor of Craig and a commercial troller. He said the closure of the fishery would, quote, devastate the troll fleet and have a significant economic impact on the region. Many local governments in Southeast Alaska have passed resolutions opposing the lawsuit, including Petersburg, Wrangell, Ketchikan, Sitka, and Juneau. With Southeast Alaska king salmon stocks in a years-long slump, fisheries across the region can expect restrictions aimed at letting more kings return to spawn. But as KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, the region's commercial fisheries manager says there are signs of hope. There's a slight upward trend showing across the region.
Like many other Chinook salmon runs in the state, Southeasts have been declining for years. Troy Tinas manages the region's commercial salmon fisheries for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And this is mostly attributed to the marine environment, whether that be near shore, the inside waters, or out in the ocean when they get out in the ocean. They've been experiencing poor survival. It's not a freshwater-related issue or necessarily a fishery harvest issue. It's just a survival in the marine environment.
But recent numbers are looking more promising. Tina says the northern panhandle is faring a bit better than the south. Although still considered poor, the Setuk and Alsek rivers and even the Chilkat near Haines are forecasted to have stronger runs than southern southeast this year.
In general, our forecasts for this upcoming year have been better than what they have been for the past several years. And that's the indication that we're seeing some better survivals out there. And hopefully that trend continues. And we start rebuilding these stocks up to a level where we don't have to take such severe restrictions and then again continue that rebuilding process to where we can start having some directed fisheries on these stocks again.
But even with the modest increase, the region's runs are still considered poor and fishing will be restricted for the time being. Tina says state managers have very few options to try and protect dwindling Chinook or King salmon stocks.
As far as management energy goes for these stocks, the only thing we can do is try to reduce harvest, which we have been doing for a number of years, and that's been through emergency order actions and then actions that have been dictated through the stock concern action plans that were approved by the Board of Fisheries.
Quite a few fisheries harvest king salmon in Southeast. Commercial fisheries like the troll, seine, and drift gillnet fisheries, as well as sport and subsistence fisheries.
All those fisheries have taken limitations, whether it's been in the case of the commercial fisheries, meant non-retention in the purse seine fishery, reducing in drift gillnet fishery, reducing area that's open, as well as time during when the Chinook salmon are running. Same thing with the troll fishery. Troll fisheries probably have the largest closures in the winter troll fishery and the spring troll fisheries, with areas being severely restricted and time being cut. And then in sport fishery, there's been non-retention implemented in a number of areas around the terminal areas, especially around the terminal areas of these wild systems.
Tina says in some cases, it's been a dramatic reduction, with allowable harvest as low as 5% of expected runs.
We've been doing about all we can do short of having a massive closures in all these fisheries. And those restrictions that we have been taking in recent years have been very effective in reducing the harvest rates on these stocks.
In the sport fishery, much of the inside passage from Ketchikan to Skagway has strict non-retention measures in place until midsummer, except in very limited hatchery areas. Tina says those measures will continue this year, retention limits, time and area limits, pretty much everything Fish and Game has been doing to try and protect Southeast Kings.
this isn't, you know, just Southeast. We've seen Chinook salmon stocks up and down the coast have been in a state of decline. But in Southeast, it's from one end of Southeast to the top end, where we have stock concerns listing for the Unic River, for the Stikine River, for Andrews Creek and Taku River and Chilkat, as well as the King Salmon River.
Fish and Game won't set an all-year king salmon harvest limit until April. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Southeast Alaska's sea otters were driven to near extinction by the fur trade in the early 20th century. But since they were reintroduced to the region in the 1960s, their numbers have grown considerably. So have calls to loosen the strict federal rules protecting them. And as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports, that has some people concerned.
Christy Ruby stands in her studio on the north end of Ketchikan next to a table piled high with soft blue, red, and purple sea otter pelts. These are her best-selling colored sea otter, and since 2017, she's used the dyed fur in her traditional handicrafts.
I use them sparingly because it costs twice or three times as much to have them dyed that color.
She says the rich colors are what make her creations unique. She's grateful for her ability to hunt the animals. But Ruby worries that efforts to reform sea otter management could jeopardize her business and traditional creations. To be clear, scientists aren't sure that otters are overpopulated in Southeast Alaska. There are now more than 25,000 spread throughout the panhandle, and one 2019 study estimated that the region's ecosystems could support three times as many. But that hasn't stopped efforts to reduce their numbers. Ketchikan's Borough Assembly recently took the topic to lawmakers in Washington, D.C., and asked for control of the federally managed species to be turned over to the state, or for current regulations to change. It's not the first time the issue has come up. Petersburg's Assembly called for higher harvests in 2018. The late Congressman Don Young attempted to make it easier to sell intact hides. Proponents say that increasing sea otter hunting would help bolster lucrative shellfish fisheries. But Ruby says those changes won't fix the problem, at least not without putting her traditional work at risk. She says state control of otter hunting could result in more red tape, preventing her from creating her work.
The state will get funding, and they'll have areas where they'll close off. Even natives won't be able to hunt that area because they say there's lack of otters there, which, you know, you cannot track an otter. They move all the time.
She's worried about allowing non-native hunters to kill sea otters. That's against the law under the 1972 Marine Mammal Protection Act. If the rules are relaxed, Ruby says she thinks hunters will flood the market with hides and lower the value of their traditional work she creates.
They'll turn them into coats and all this stuff that they want to do. And our crafts will be gone because we don't have the ability to pay that much money for what the hunters will get for that hide.
She's also worried about backlash. If sea otter pelts become a widely traded commercial commodity, she says she's concerned that could spark calls for hunting to be banned outright. Will Ware, a Tlingit artist who lives in Petersburg, also opposes opening sea otter hunts to non-native people. He says there are simpler solutions, starting with the Marine Mammal Protection Act itself. The law currently requires hunters to be at least one-fourth coastal Alaska Native by blood quantum. He says he'd like to allow any enrolled tribal member to hunt.
I think you would see a lot more otters being harvested each year. That would be low-hanging fruit that would immediately make a difference.
Weir also thinks that the rule should change to allow the exportation of tanned hides and handicrafts to Canada. Neither is currently allowed under federal law. He says Tlingit and Haida people have been sending goods through that route for years. Jeremiah James, an artist based in Yakutat, agrees that non-native people shouldn't be allowed to kill sea otters. He says laxer rules could allow businesses to squeeze out Alaska Native artists.
When people talk about opening it up to more people, all I see is another thing that's being taken away from my people.
But Ware, the Petersburg artist, says he sympathizes with crabbers and dive fishermen who say that higher otter populations are weighing on fisheries. He emphasized that he doesn't want to pit fishermen and native hunters and artists against each other.
We sense the frustration. Alaska Natives utilize the shrimp and crab, you know, as a part of our subsistence foods and our traditional and customary foods for millennia. We don't want to see the crab or shrimp disappearing any more than anyone else.
Back in her brightly lit studio, surrounded by fur-draped mannequins and old sewing machines, Ruby, the Ketchikan artist, says she agrees. She thinks the answer lies in more aggressive support for native hunters and maybe even more communication with crabbers and fishermen about where they're seeing the otters move.
It's a no-brainer when it comes to actually making something happen, but we just don't get the full cooperation from everybody.
The bottom line, she says, is that policymakers concerned about the impacts of otter populations should focus their efforts on increasing the capacity of existing hunters and craftspeople. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Reagan Miller.
This is KTOO.